Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 131 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way you will be automatically updated when we release the episodes, but you can also listen to us on many other podcast streaming services such as Stitcher, Google Play. If you can, please do rate and review our podcast. If you have a spare 30 seconds, guys, it would really, really help me out. Just go leave us a 5-star review if you like it. You know, just leave us a review and as many stars as you want to, and to help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe. And now for this week's podcast. On the odd occasion, we get invited to press days before a show goes out on tour or arrives here in the West End. But, you know, we aren't journalists here at Curtain Call. We're theater professionals. So it's always a slightly different slant that we take, and the chats that we have, they aren't interviews. They are just that. They are chats. They're conversations. And it's always great to have a conversation with somebody we've met or worked with before, because that conversation starts pretty much where we left off the last time. So when we were asked by the lovely people at Corner Shop PR here in London if we'd like to come down and talk to the cast of What's in a Name, including two of our previous guests on this podcast, Olivier Award nominee Summer Stralin and Alex Gaumont, as well as Joe Thomas from the hit show Inbetweeners and more, we knew it was going to be a good day. However, in what was a first for me and the entire company of What's in a Name, rounded off the cast with Beau Poiré and Laura Patch, they actually performed the play in a rehearsed reading before we got to speak with him, and it was fantastic. I mean, we laughed a lot, which bodes well, I have to say, before they head off on a UK tour, but of course, I will tell you more about later. I first had to ask the guys exactly what it felt like performing in front of an audience of the press and Kurt Golf, not journalists, in just their first week of rehearsal. Have a listen. I have never been to a press junket on either side of the microphone, mm-hmm. and right after I've done a reading on the second day of rehearsal.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about it.
It was nail-biting.
This is a press junket. However, we just watched a read-through.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Why don't we always do this? I just tweeted, why don't we always do this?
Absolutely. I think Adam Blanchet has probably just revolutionized the press junket industry.
Yeah.
No, it is. I don't know if they did that for Birmingham or not, but he definitely thought of it for this time round. And he thought, well, you know, people need to hear it.
Yeah.
You read it on the page, and it might mean something, and people might not have time to read it on the page if they just sent it.
Yeah.
But if they're offered a bit of food and an hour and a half, just listen to it. And obviously, everybody in the room knew that it was early days.
Yeah.
And obviously, things will, you know, cues will tighten, and the comedy will sort of lift off even more. But it's a nice way to say, here's a hint of what it could be.
No, actually, I think it's really helpful because we heard your guys' feedback in terms of laughter, and that's really helpful for us going forward. You see what lands, see what we need to tighten up. So it's actually really useful. You know, yesterday was our first day of rehearsal, so you got through that terrifying thing of reading it for the first time.
Right,
so
this
was reading it for the second time. It wasn't so bad.
Do you know what? I think what was weird is that it felt really nice.
Mm.
That's sort of like one might expect to feel a bit more nervous or anything, but everyone's so lovely, and we got it up on its feet yesterday, just did it for the first time, just did it all day through.
As you do, first day.
Exactly. We bumped into a bit of furniture I dropped a few plates and lines. But it was sort of fun and kind of made it feel like unprecious.
Yeah.
Like just made it like, well, look, we're just, you know, finding our way and having fun.
It's
and
so freeing, though, isn't it?
It is,
I tell you,
freeing.
What's amazing.
That's the word.
It's freeing because
it's freeing.
You know, we have to, you know, we care what people think. We're people pleasers. We're actors.
Yeah, yeah.
However, like for someone to, like, you've got a bunch of people. There's a room, 50 people in the room, and going, these actors are trusting their instincts. I know. I've been,
Yeah.
You know what it's like?
Yes.
Your instinct.
You
haven't found
it
yet. You just decided to go with your instinct.
Yes.
There's something so cool.
Yeah, there is, actually. There is. Yeah, because you have to kind of get out of your own way, I think.
Yeah.
You have to almost give yourself permission to not do a very good job to do it. Do you know what I mean? You have to sort of go, look, okay, so I don't get all the bits right, or I stumble over some lines.
Better to do that right now.
Yeah, totally, totally. Or, you know, or I sort of feel nervous, or I feel weird, or whatever. Mm. But it's like, it's just like, okay, so that's what it's going to be. Because I think your brain can't, if you're not... If your brain's not like relaxed, it can't remember anything.
Yeah.
It definitely can't listen.
Yeah.
And but that felt really like we were all listening to each other. It just felt really comfortable. Mm. It felt like we'd not just done it two times before. So I'm not quite sure why that felt so nice for us. But
I wanted to chat to Alex and Summer about their musical theater backgrounds and how this show would be different to them. And they both had fabulous answers.
Well, I think I was saying this earlier. It's I've had the joy of doing a lot of comedies within the musical theater world. So I've done pieces like Full Monty, Guys and Dolls, Top Hat, which I played a crazy Italian in that, so it was almost slapstick, you know.
Right.
So I have done a lot of comedies, and most of the musicals I've done were book musicals.
Yeah.
So I haven't done many sung through musicals. Mm-hmm. So they had big long scenes, and you just sort of really get to grips with the timings of dialogue and how that can change. Because obviously the thing with music is there is interpretation within the sung line, but it is essentially metered because it's written.
It has
like
to be.
It's music,
it has to fit within a...
Yeah, but dialogue, there's a lot more freedom. But I guess maybe the musicality, a lot of comedy timing is musical in a way, because it's, you know, ta-ta-ta, you know, it's little timings. So maybe the musical side of my background would help with that, I suppose. But what I really think I can bring is the fact that I've done a lot of comedies prior to that, whether it was a musical or like Taming of the Shrew with the Globe, you know.
I mean, I feel really lucky and privileged that the last comedy that I did was Young Frankenstein, and I was working with Mel Brooks, who is a comedy legend.
He's kind of funny.
He's kind of funny, you know, sometimes a bit come on. He's like, he is one of the funniest men alive still, and has been for the last 60 years, longer.
Mm.
And I learned a lot from him as far as timing is concerned, and that was incredible. But also over the years, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I do feel that musical theatre is this sort of looked upon as the poor relation of acting.
I
don't think it's fair, because we are all storytellers, and just because I happen to be able to sing a topsy and put my leg behind my head at the same time as being funny, apparently, is not as good. But I'm not bitter about it.
Yeah.
I'm not, because I see myself as an actress. If other people don't, that's fine.
Yep.
You know, I feel like you can bring so many things. You know, working with Jack O'Brien on Love Never Dies, you know, he gave me some great... The main thing, I think, is bringing... having different... a different idea of each line for, you know... Not necessarily every night changing it, or changing the intensity or whatever, but it's just having different ways of thinking about it really helps, because it also keeps it fresher.
Finally, to end the episode, Joe Thomas and I talked about the etiquette and, well, the lack thereof in your normal everyday dinner party with families and friends. And a warning, this gets rather sweary, not just by Joe, mea culpa too. So if you're listening at work, you might want to put your headphones on or wait to listen to the next 8 minutes on your way home.
It's a very good script.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
it's
God,
like,
yeah.
It feels like it's kind of all there, and to some extent, it's almost our first job is just to present the script, and just because it's just there, all there. And I mean, actually, even the first time I read this, I was like, oh, this is very good. I mean, it's very kind of light on its feet. And I love that it's got this real irreverence. Like, it doesn't even really care about settling the argument that it first brings up.
Yeah.
They literally don't even really care.
They don't revert.
Each
one is kind of gone, let's move to the next thing
out of me. It's amazing. Like, and I think that's great, like, not to feel that the play has to kind of, move towards this kind of, I mean, a lesser play, this would end up as a kind of bunker play. Like by the end, they're all calling each other Nazis and talking about who's culpable or whether we're all guilty, and it would it would become. And there'd be like one character who hadn't spoken for like 15 minutes, but was just in a ball in the corner, and it doesn't do that. And I think that shows confidence and intelligence as well. And I suppose also it's so nice that in the end it is just a dinner party.
Yeah. We've all had
absolutely,
them, right?
Yeah, in the end, it's an argument about a dinner party. Yeah. And in the end, Vince is really saying, what really matters is that after this, I had a child.
Yeah.
And it fuck this stupid argument. Yeah. None of this matters. Like, that's, and I suppose, in a way, that's why dinner parties are so... they're inherently comic, because it just doesn't fucking matter. Like, we behave as though the stakes are really high. And actually, the stakes, they're not even low. They're non-existent. The stakes are non-existent at a dinner party. I think that's why they're... it's the classic kind of... it's very good for that kind of... I suppose, for want of a better word, kind of like that kind of like the comedy of the sort of pretentious middle class as well, because people are kind of going into battle, but it's not a battle.
Yeah.
If this argument never happened, nothing would change.
Yeah.
Like they're not doing the first draft of the Treaty of Versailles or like trying to set carbon limits or something. None of it even has to happen, and I think it's that recognition that's so nice, but while at the same time still getting all that vile and all that sort of vituperance and that fury, and like it does remind me of like very, very good sketch comedy as well, that thing about you doesn't feel that it needs to resolve it, you just throw it away.
I don't think that, talking to all your castmates, you know, we've all been part of the dinner party, and I said I played my part in a shitty dinner party where I've been the dick and had to apologize because I've just wound my sister up.
I've been a dick at dinner parties, and I think they have that energy that like weddings often have, where they're quite long, the people drinking the whole time,
too much
drink, just too much time in the zone. Sometimes there's a run of dinner parties at my family where I was like, I don't think we even know how to end a dinner party unless it's with an argument. Like, it was almost like,
that's it.
Well, somebody needs to storm off, otherwise we're going to be here all fucking night. And I think, like, and what's interesting is that the search afterwards for the guilty party, it's never who was right and wrong about the argument. It's just who brought up that fucking topic.
Who's going to apologize?
I mean, the fact that it's come to that is truly pathetic. Yeah. Like, we don't even know. Like, or perhaps we're not able to apportion blame on truly moral questions.
Yeah.
Instead, we just blame the person who brings it up. They do have that tendency. But at the same time, it's always undercut by the fact that somebody's about to bring out the pudding or something. Like, it's just like, how can this really be?
Well, somebody's missed.
Yeah,
here's the thing.
Yeah.
What I loved about this is somebody's missed a piece of conversation. They've come back in and you're still at the same place.
I know, it's amazing. Yeah, the fact that you can just miss all of it. It completely undermines the seriousness of the thing. The fact that I always find it quite funny on those shows where, shows which I've done actually, where people are cooking a meal while at the same time doing an interview, and they'll be like, and they must have been really, and then the actor will kind of be going, and then I guess when I did lose my dad, and then the chef's going, yeah, that's sage, by the way. And it's like, I don't think this format, does this work? This thing about like them talking about the Damascus moment that brought them into their career while you're trying to demonstrate like what seasoning you put in the minced pork. do they cut against the design? I don't know. I mean, I say, it seems to, I don't know. I've done those shows, and actually they seem to be popular, but some of them are just like, just stop cooking the fucking meal. Like, just stop. Do the meal later. Like, just have the fucking, like, but I think it's supposed to, that can have, things can just interpose that just cut away all the all the seriousness, and yet people are kind of also at their most pretentious at dinner parties. I think they're quite safe.
Also, you said it. I was just about to say you're safe.
You're
safe. And things are slip
out. Also, I think you feel, you know, perhaps you might feel able to say something in front of your partner with other people there that you wouldn't say if it was just directly to your partner. Yeah. I think there's quite a lot of that. I think often people find themselves saying things that they're like, God, I didn't expect to be saying this, but here I am saying it, and now I've got to carry on. And yeah. And I think the other thing about safety is that we often speak about these kind of like global affairs and kind of what seems like, well, maybe it's not that dry now, but at some level it's dry and it's intellectual, and we feel that that's safe. What we forget is that everybody's got a dog in the fight there somewhere.
Yeah.
And somewhere somebody's thinking, in this story that is apparently not to do with any of us, I'm that person. And then you suddenly, so somebody will say something like, oh, well, I think that, like, Britain's lost touch with its peasant cuisine. And then the other person's like, fuck you. And it's like, what?
It was about three hours ago.
So. Yeah. And you realise that people somehow, everyone's talking about themselves and they think that everyone else is talking about them as well. And it's like a proxy war. Yeah. That's what I always think it is. It's like, and that's what sustained it. So again, that safety thing, and that's what's funny as well, because you think you're safe and then suddenly you're like, how did we get here? I thought we were talking about Formula One. Like, what? I thought this is so that's interesting as well. But no, safety is, but that's what we like them as well, because we need to have these forums where we can say whatever the fuck we want and in front of people that we trust and like. And I mean, I think, you know, that's why, you know, we are, that's why they lead to arguments. I think the arguments are good, though. I mean, I think they clear the air, right? Yeah. I mean, I think, again, with this play, it's nice because it's sort of, the air has been cleared by the end.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Well, thanks very much. It was lovely to meet you.
The Company of the Tour of What's in a Name, starring Joe Thomas, Summer Stralin, Alex Gaumont, Laura Patch, and Beau Poiré, written by Matthew Delaporte and Alexandre de la Patellière, with this production adapted and directed by Jeremy Sams. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping notes. If you are a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com, sign up for a free profile page. You know, all you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and let the world know what you guys are up to. Join the Curtain Call family. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Curtain Call, and you can follow me personally at John Schwab, JohnSchwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Get in touch with us by any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to the entire company of What's in a Name and the folks over at Corner Shop PR for setting the day up. The show will be touring to Guildford's Yvonne Arnault Theater from the 5th to the 14th of September, with a press night on the 12th of September. It will then head to Glasgow, York, Aylesbury, Cambridge, Windsor, Richmond, and Southampton. So if you're in the London area, like I'm going to go see it in Richmond, because it's funny, guys. Do yourself a favor. If you need a laugh, go see this play. It is genuinely funny, and the cast even more so. Thanks for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.